Bigfoot? Is it real or is it a hoax?
For ages, he has hidden in the forest, eluded hunters, baffled scientists, and remain a mystery.
My entire life I've seen shadow people.
For powerful and effective constipation relief.
Hello and welcome to Don't Break the Oath podcast.
How the devil are you? So today we have
Preston Dennett,
who is an author of paranormal, UFOs, alien abductions, that kind of stuff. He was originally a field investigator for the Mutual UFO Network, you know, MUFON, and obviously he took encounters stories then and asked.
Yeah,
actually. The more he asked people, the more stories he got.
Yeah, and that's why he started to investigate more, didn't he?
Yeah, so he's actually ended up with hundreds and hundreds of stories, and yeah. He's written them into books. So we touched a little bit on some of the stories today. We mostly get his feelings on various things, that kind of stuff. So before we get into that, I just wanted to say big thank you to Jerry and Tracy from the Hillbilly Horror Stories.
Yeah, thank you, Jerry. Thank you, Tracy.
If you haven't already listened to them, go and check them out. They do a very similar thing to us. Right, let's get on with the show. We give you
Preston Dennett.
How you got involved in researching this alien abduction phenomenon?
Well, you know, I tell you, it wasn't voluntary. This was not something I was looking for.
Yeah.
Did not believe in UFOs. Really, I was very skeptical. There was this report on the news in 1986 about a sighting over Alaska. And it was very tongue-in-cheek on the news. They just kind of joked about it.
Yeah, the X-Files music and all that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Usually the case.
But there was this pilot, and he was, you know, putting his reputation on the line, and really impressed me. I'm like, this guy's got to be crazy. He's on drugs. He's hallucinating. He's hoaxing. There's just no way he saw an alien spacecraft. I later found out it was a really impressive case. There was a lot of witnesses, radar returns, and it followed his plane for nearly an hour. None of that was in the news report, but it interested me enough to start asking people that, you know, I knew within my family, my coworkers, my friends. I brought it up. And I have to tell you, I got the biggest shock of my life. I found out, gosh, nearly a quarter of the people that I knew were keeping secrets from me regarding UFOs. They had had some really dramatic encounters.
Mm. Okay.
You know, I mean, my brother, he chased a UFO across the San Fernando Valley here in Southern California with his two friends. My sister-in-law saw a UFO hovering over Van Nuys Air Force Reserve Base, just these three bright lights that they couldn't explain. She had two friends with her. That was another thing I found out right away. All these people who said they were seeing UFOs, they weren't alone. I assumed that a lot of UFO witnesses were by themselves, you know, late at night.
Yeah. That is a common misconception, yeah. In it, that, you know, these people are, you know, because you can easily, you know, a lot of these you can debunk by saying it's Venus and it's this, that, and the other, if it's just one person seeing it. But when you're talking about a group of witnesses, it's a lot,
yeah,
it's a lot
changes,
more difficult
it?
To it debunk, changes. Innit?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it really is. And these are people I knew weren't lying to me. This is my brother and I brought it up at work, and the lady I worked with for years.
I'm interested to know about your brother. How long had he seen this before he mentioned it to you?
Well, I remember he came home one evening and said, oh, I saw a UFO, and none of us were interested.
Yeah.
We just kind of laughed at him and said, yeah, right. Did not believe him, but I remembered that, and that's why I kind of went to him first.
Okay.
But he described this typical, you know, metallic craft with colored lights on it, a dome on top. Really impressive, actually. So, yeah, all these people I knew had these encounters. I brought it up at work. And this lady I worked with for years, she's like, oh, yeah, me and my whole family, we watched this UFO darting around over our cabin. And in walks Dorothy, another lady I'd worked with for years. She's like, UFOs? Oh, I totally believe in them. One followed me home from the library. And she tells me this story about how she lives 5 minutes away from the library. They left the library right when it closed at 9 o'clock. And this UFO shows up and follows them home from the library, right over their car. I interviewed her friend and her mother. And she says, it's really weird, Preston. We live 5 minutes away, left at 9 o'clock. When we got home, it was 10:15. We lost like an hour of time, and I have no idea how.
Mm. Yeah, usually the case now. Isn't it?
Yeah, what yeah, sort of
missing time?
You know, what sort of percentage of the cases you deal with have missing time? Is it common?
I think it's probably a little more common than I initially thought, because yeah, that one took me by surprise, and I had to look back at some of the other cases, because there was another guy. He's like, yeah, we were watching this UFO, and next thing I knew, it was in a different place. We were really frightened, and we took off. And it didn't even occur to me that he had had missing time, but after I questioned him again, it looked like he did.
Mm.
So when it gets really close to you, you know, within a couple hundred feet, a UFO, the chances of missing time go way up. And I'm guessing, gosh, 1 in 10 sightings maybe have missing time.
Well, that's pretty high still, though, isn't it? 1 in 10.
So obviously,
yeah, particularly when it gets close. Yeah, like yeah, I mentioned.
So the missing time then is possibly an abduction. Obviously, they've lost an hour or maybe 2 hours.
Or is it just is it the craft, the mechanism of the craft actually causing it? Do you think? So you see, you go. So obviously, you're saying it's normally when it's close,
right? I don't. Well, you know, we're still kind of at the speculation stage, but I'm pretty sure it's not the mechanism so much as, you know, this is purposefully done by the yeah, ETs in an attempt to make people forget and kind of cover their tracks.
Yeah.
Or maybe reduce the trauma level. That's a possibility. I don't think it's our own mind doing it.
But that, I mean,
so whatever you know, is there, it's actually stored in the subconscious, because when they go through these hypnosis procedures,
yeah,
it comes out. So it's absolutely stored in subconscious when it comes out.
So right.
Then they find out they've been on the craft, they've been on the table, been on so-and-so, aren't they? So,
Yeah, hypnosis absolutely works too.
Yeah.
I don't normally recommend it unless, you know, the person's having anxieties or is just dead set on finding out what happened to them.
Yeah.
In this latest book that I wrote, Inside UFOs, only 2 of the cases involve hypnosis. I kind of wanted to stay away from it because I didn't want people to say, oh, it's false memory syndrome.
Yeah, it's too subjective, yeah. So only 2 of the cases that involve hypnosis. That means that you're talking about a lot of cases where people have got instant recall of this. I mean, that's not very common in abduction cases, though, is it? So is that based more so because these people are having more than one experience, would you say?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you've hit the nail on the head there, because a lot of people do have missing time and don't recall, and then they'll have another experience and they recall a little bit more. And if they get over their fear level, then they can perhaps recall the entire incident, which is what happened with one gentleman I interviewed. Yeah, he had missing time a number of times, but a couple of people actually finally did have an experience where they were taken on board and remembered the whole darn thing. And some just remember it, you know, without hypnosis. For whatever reason, they just completely remember it. Mm. Others remember bits and pieces.
That could be a showing from a television program. Something came and it just a remembrance thing where they.
I mean, that happened. I mean, it's a little bit more trivial than an abduction, but I had a UFO sighting, and again, this one was only a couple of hundred feet above me, and and there was 3 of us at the time that saw it, and I remember, you know, leaving the area. Actually, we ran away. It was only sort of kids at the time, but we ran away, got home, and I cannot remember talking about it the next day, that night, you know, the next week. And it was probably 6 or 7 years later, I was watching a TV program which was about UFOs. It was a documentary. And this old lady just happened to see something very similar to what we saw. It was started off as a star. She watched it. She was approaching these traffic lights. She came to a stop. And as she stopped, this craft changed from a star to a craft. in front of her, or just above her. She said it was a dumbbell sort of shape, which is not too similar, dissimilar from what we saw. We saw, the one that we saw was more like, a figure of eight sort of shape. But it was 6 or 7 years later. It was only that sort of brought the memory back, you know what I mean? It just, literally, as soon as I saw that on TV, yeah. It all came flooding back to me. And I rung up my brother, who actually was there at the time, and said, you've got to come and see this documentary. He came down and he watched it and he said, bloody hell, he said, that looks exactly like what we saw, you know? But we spoke about it for 6 or 7 years, so it just came back like that, you know? So obviously it was in there, but I just completely...
In your subconscious.
Blacked it out, and I don't know, again, like you just said, I don't know whether it was me blocking that, my brain, sorry, or, you know, if the beings on the craft, or whatever, did it, do you know what I mean? You know, they'll probably never ever know, but...
I'm going to say the beings, I mean, because I see that quite a bit. There was one lady I interviewed who was having major encounters. She had an encounter. I interviewed her about it, called her up later to do a follow-up interview, and she not only didn't remember the encounter, she did not remember me interviewing her. And I had it on tape. You know, I had her record it. Boy, that really freaked her out.
Yeah. Well, you played it back to her?
I didn't. She did not want to hear it. No. Yeah.
Well, her head must be full of all this stuff then. Must be really full of this, whatever they've put in the head. So they don't want it to get out.
So I guess we're kind of jumping ahead here. But, I mean, a lot of people are going to think abductions, and they're going to think the greys, yeah? Because that's the most archetypal, isn't it?
That's what the media most put out.
We're not necessarily just talking about, because, I mean... Before we even get into the different species working together, because again, that's commonly reported, isn't it?
Yep.
And you've probably got some examples of that. But are we talking about more than one race doing these abductions?
Absolutely. I have to say, I do get a lot of reports of greys and variations of the greys. It's not just one type. But I'm going to say at least 50% of the people I talk to report some variation of grey type ETs. Okay. Some are emotional, you know, some do express emotions and caring about the witness. Others seem to be less emotional or almost arrogant even. People say they're treated like a lab rat. I've heard that a number of times. Mm. But yeah, it's often a variation of the grays, anywhere from 3 feet tall to 5 feet, usually slender, large heads, you know, large dark eyes. Jumpsuits sometimes, not always, but pretty much the standard description. When someone comes in front of me and says, oh, you know, I've seen ETs, their descriptions are pretty familiar to me.
Yeah.
It takes a lot to surprise me because I've been doing this for a pretty long time.
Yeah. Just give some examples of, the different races that are involved in the other 50% of cases.
The greys are definitely one type. And I'm not sure they're just the greys. They could be variations of greys that we're just lumping into one category.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
But beyond that, there's, you know, the praying mantis or grasshopper type. I get, 10%, 20% of those. And those are generally described as 8 feet tall, 9 feet tall. Got a couple of cases, though. I mean, one guy in the book, he says it was 15 feet tall, what he saw. Yeah. And I tried to talk him down. And I'm like, that's probably a little taller.
That's tall.
Right? I mean, he's like, no. I mean, he's a Navy medic, a trained observer, a great witness. And he stood right next to this thing. He's like, nope, it was more than twice my height. Yeah. I'm not exaggerating. This thing was 15 feet tall.
And is that the only one he saw?
He saw three of them at once.
Was they all 15 feet?
Yes, they were all 15 feet. And later, you know, that was the case in the book. Someone read the book, called me up, or emailed me. A teacher from Illinois was out jogging one night, early in the morning, and saw one of these things walking down the road. Thought it was a man on stilts, was her first thought, until she looked at it. Like, nope, that's not a man. You know, this thing looks like a giant bug.
I wouldn't like that. I would not like that. Out of all the aliens, they are the one that creeps me out the most. They look the most menacing, but I hear that it's contrary to that. A lot of people that meet the praying mantis type ones say they're quite
spiritual.
Yeah, spiritual, emotional, that kind of stuff. Is that your understanding?
I picked that up as well.
I've gotten that in a number of cases, though not always. Some people take one look at these guys and like they're done.
Yeah, that'd be
you're gone.
And they're like, no, this was too scary. You know, I couldn't do it. But for the most part, yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, because I mean, I look at the grey and I think, you know, I could probably take a grey. I'd probably take a few, like five or six.
No, I don't like them. No, I just don't.
I don't. Yeah, but I mean, if it came to a battle, I could probably take a few of them. But when them praying mantis things, you know, I'd run.
No. Well.
Yeah, I don't know. Even taking on a little short 3-foot grays, I've talked to guys who are, you know, big tough guys, you know, been in the Vietnam War or what have you, said, no, this was much scarier. I couldn't take them on. I was paralyzed. Mm. Whereas one lady I talked to, she was a housewife and a store clerk. She was taken on board and she freaked out, jumped up, lashed out and kicked one of these grays. She says it's all squishy and she apparently snapped its neck. And they all filed out of the room, and next thing she knows, they're taking her back. So she took them on. And, you know, I've talked to a few people who've done that. They've jumped up and lashed out.
See that? Hit these guys. You know, I've heard a few cases where that the people have sort of come round almost. You know, while it's happening, they say that the greys actually just stood there and like scratching their head to say, this is not supposed to happen.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to wake up, you know.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, is it, do they use machines to knock us out? Or is it because their mind as well? You know, they say when you're paralyzed, is that machinery?
Or medicine?
Or is it
Right. I've wondered about that. There are cases where people, they'll say, oh, it was holding a wand or a rod of some sort and it touched me with it and I fell unconscious. But there's one lady I talked to. She was a lady I actually worked with. I had this little statue of a gray type ET on my desk that someone had given to me and had, you know, just set it up, and she walks in and screams. She says, what's that? I'm like, that's a gray alien. She started to tell me this story about how she saw this gray type ET. She had just had her son. He was maybe a week old, and he was laying in her master bedroom with her, you know, so she could watch on him.
Yeah.
She was in bed with her husband, and she wakes up because she hears this weird sound, like someone squeaking their wet fingers on glass. And she looks over at the picture window. It's a huge window in her bedroom. It can't open. It's fixed to the wall. And this gray-type ET is trying to open it. And she's freaking out. She jumps up, realizing it's not human. It's looking right at her baby.
Mm-hmm.
It's obviously interested in her baby. And as soon as she like leans up, it looks over at her and knocks her down flat. And she can't move. And didn't have anything in its hands. She says it was just its mind power. Its willpower was taken over her. And that's something I've heard a number of times. This kind of paralysis they put over people.
Yeah.
I think it's by their minds. I honestly do. They're all linked up. They're telepathic. So they've got this incredible willpower that can just take over ours.
So, I mean, did she fear for the child then, or was she just more concerned with the actual creature itself? Did she get the feeling that, you know, it was there for the child?
She absolutely did. It was looking right at her baby. It was like 2 feet away from her child.
Yeah.
And she wanted to get to her baby as soon as she could, and she just couldn't. She couldn't move. She could feel the tears, you know, going down her cheeks. Finally, it just walks away. The paralysis breaks. She scoops up her kid, wakes up her husband, and her husband's like, oh, you just had a nightmare. She says, no, I didn't. The next morning, you know, she leaves. She says, I'm going to my sister's. And finally she comes home, and she says, we're buying 2 guard dogs. And the husband says, okay. You know, and she says, you know what? I want to move. This is ridiculous. I can't even sleep here. And they ended up selling their house over this one incident, which, by the way, was the only incident she's ever had in her life, which doesn't really fit the pattern. normally when someone has something like this, they've had an experience at childhood, probably in their teen years, throughout their life.
Yeah.
Again, this paralysis it kind of fascinates me because, again, when you get a supposedly demon, you know, and he's standing on your chest or he's on the bed and you can't move, you're paralyzed, you know, and then you get these ETs or greys and they can actually do the same. Are they the same beings? But of a different rogue species? Because, you know, you always, some people say, oh, I can't move, that I couldn't move my head. And so.
Yeah, I looked into that, into sleep paralysis, out of body experiences, to, you know, demonology and all these books on demon hauntings. And there are similarities, but I think we're dealing with separate phenomena. I'm almost positive, it's my assessment at least, that we're not dealing with demons.
Okay.
Because, you know, some people think, oh yeah, UFOs are demonic, because there are some similarities. But if you study the whole demonology, it's a different phenomena. It manifests in a different way. And yeah, there is that paralysis thing, but
again, I think what it is, we humans are prone to that kind of paralysis, aren't we?
Mm.
You know, so it's, you know,
right.
I believe 1,000% of UFOs, and I believe, you know, it's, but, you know, when it's again against kind of free will, when someone holds you down and or takes you on your ship without your permission, yeah. It's.
That's the bit that always confuses me, is the amount of cases which you see where people believe these creatures were here for the good of mankind, but going about it in a very dubious way.
I mean, you've always said to me, Lee, ain't you? You know, your belief is that these beings don't give a rat's ass about us.
So,
but then we've got cases here from Preston saying, you know, they come in and heal people and, you know, they...
Yeah, well,
information.
We'll get on to that.
So,
I mean, where do you stand on their agenda then, you know, regarding are they here for good or bad? Because, like you say, these cases where they're taking people, you know, knocking them out to take them, doesn't seem friendly to me, but then people sort of contradict that. So where do you stand on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a crime in our society to kidnap someone.
Absolutely.
And God knows it's scary and traumatic for these people.
It's definitely a crime to anal probe somebody as well.
Well, yeah, quite a lot of that.
And unpleasant, unless you're into that thing. Right. But, but yeah, I flip-flopped. I have to tell you, over the years, when I came into this, I'm like, oh, this is horrible. This is really bad. But over the years, talking to people, I've always asked them, you know, do you think these guys are evil? Almost none of them will say that. And what we don't have is any evidence of what I would call sadism or Nazi-like torture, where they're intentionally trying to scare people or hurt them. That's not their agenda at all.
Everything they're doing has got a purpose.
Yeah, they're not trying to hurt people. They're not trying to scare them. In fact, there's a number of cases where people are screaming and they're like, why are you doing this? And the ETs are puzzled, if anything. Yeah. They're curious. They're like, why are you screaming? You know, why are you so afraid? And things like this.
Mm.
And I think if you look at their messages they're giving people, what they actually do and say, it reveals their agenda to be actually pretty benign, if not benevolent. Because they do talk to people. Generally, you know, not a whole lot. They'll say, don't be afraid. We won't hurt you. This sort of thing. Very tight-lipped about where they come from. And this...
I do hear that, but that's the same thing that paedophiles say to children, isn't it? You know what I mean?
They say,
it's the same thing, though, isn't it? It's that, you know, they, you know, what they say and what they do doesn't always coincide, does it?
I think it's also what the media put out, from the horror stories to the programs and the aliens and get your guns out and shoot them. You know, anything in the sky is horrible, evil. So you've got to, you know, to shoot them. Right. You know, that's, and then also
fear sells too.
Yeah.
I mean, when you have a traumatic encounter, people run and get to help from the closest UFO investigator. Whereas, you know, if you're healed, say, or have a benevolent encounter, you're a little bit less likely to run and tell people.
Yeah.
First of all, because you don't need support, and I think the ridicule factor is a little bit more prominent in cases of benevolent ETs.
Oh, absolutely, go along with that.
But yeah, the messages people get usually fall into three categories, and they're really, I mean, it makes me hopeful about their agenda, because what they're telling people is they're talking about three different areas. One is giving warnings of future disasters. This is very common, all the way down to the 1950s in the contactee era with Friendly Space Brothers, all the way through the Greys and the Mantids or whoever you talk to, they're given the same message, which is, you know, don't do nuclear proliferation, stop polluting, or your warlike ways are, you know, the wrong way to go, this sort of thing.
Yep.
And that's very common. That's something I hear all the time. And beyond that, there's another category, which is alternative energy. And this is something I hear quite a bit. People are taken to the engine room, say, and told how this thing works, how their craft operate on electromagnetic energy. And they're told in some cases how to build a sort of a free energy motor. I've heard this a number of times. And they talk about fossil fuels and how, you know, that's dangerous for our environment. And a third category is spiritual messages of some sort, often about healing or maybe past lives or out-of-body experiences or psychic development or this sort of thing. And that's, by and large, this is what the ETs are telling people.
Mm.
Yeah.
And why don't they tell everybody?
Yeah.
Because, you know, like you're saying about them, you know, concerned as to why people are screaming and, you know what I mean? Because they do seem puzzled quite a lot of the time when they deal with human beings. So I wonder why, you know, what sense do you get why they don't just come out on, because it could take over any news station, couldn't it? And
right.
Tell the world.
Again, it's,
they seem to be trending towards open official contact. I don't think they're going away. It looks like we're having a slow escalation of activity, or at least we're becoming more aware of it. I mean, we know they've been around for centuries, if not thousands of years, just from, you know, Renaissance paintings and
cave
petroglyphs and so on. But nothing like what we've got going on since, you know, the 1940s at least, where started a major wave of sightings, and it's pretty much just continued. So it's escalating. They're here. You know, they're landing. They're taking people on board. I don't think we have anything like that historically. I think this is, it's unprecedented in terms of the, at least the numbers of people who are having this experience. So yeah, I think, I mean, if you look at the waves of sightings over various areas, whether it's, you know, Belgium or Gulf Breeze or Phoenix Lights or the Hudson Valley waves, they're putting on a publicity campaign. This is what it comes down to. They want to be seen.
Obviously, we know that the government do know about them, and they've talked to them and communicated with them.
I don't go as far as that, but yeah.
I think they have.
Mm.
Yeah, I've talked to a number of government whistleblowers who say, yeah, we have the craft, we have the alien bodies, at high levels of the military for sure, we know about it, and we're trending towards disclosure as well, and that's I think the ETs are not showing themselves because it would have a huge effect on our society.
And
they know better than that.
I mean, do they have craft, do they have bodies? I would say yeah, but do they have contact with them? I would say no. I just don't see an interest in on their side of things to get, you know, to be interested in us. I just can't work that out. As far as the disclosure goes, I'm of the belief that we will never get disclosure until we've got zero point energy or near as close to zero point
free energy.
I think while they can still make money, the elites and all the rest, it can still make money out of oil,
fossil fuels,
these kind of things. I think we'll never get disclosure until we've used up
until these guys are out of the way.
Yeah, until we've used up all that and got because. If you go and announce disclosure, then you're basically alluding to the fact that these craft can travel, you know, zero point energy, all the rest of it. So you're basically at that point you're accepting that there's a reality of it.
And also you're actually changing religion, which is another big question.
Yeah, so you've probably got two big issues there. I mean, where do you stand as regards to why we don't have disclosure?
Yeah, well, I agree with you 100%. It's money and power. It's these one percenters. These guys are controlling. They have the UFO hardware, and they're not going to let it go. It's going to be a fight. It's going to be like the civil rights movement. You know, it's going to come out bit by bit by bit. And we are seeing disclosure. I mean, there are – you cannot find a head of category. There's heads of state who have said they've seen UFOs, presidents, there's governors, there's generals, there's senators.
Not to mention the two times that we found life on Mars.
Right. NASA keeps kind of inching their way towards this. Mm. I think they know already, but they're like on a program of controlled disclosure just so they can keep – in control of this whole situation, which is going to explode. The proof is going to come through the, you know, a grassroots movement. If they don't do it, someone's going to get proof. A UFO is going to crash. Something's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And I think the ETs will just say, you know what? That's it. We're landing. The chips fall where they may.
Which wouldn't be a bad thing, would it, Lee? Really?
No, I think the sooner the better.
You know, but again, you know, we've
even if it's like an Independence Day type deal.
See me out there with a plaque.
I'm
you know,
still up for
hello
it.
Aliens.
Yeah,
I'm
no,
here.
I won't be doing
you know,
that, but,
I'll be a few miles away from there. I'm afraid.
I'm not sure disclosure is going to come from you know one of the major superpowers, the U.S.
No.
I doubt it. Maybe Mexico or Brazil or one of these small, you know.
Yeah, I would say Brazil. But then you've got a few states around the world, Belgium. These sorts of places where they basically officially don't deny UFOs now, do they? I mean, you had the, like you mentioned just prior, the Belgian wave there. They were so sick and tired of chasing them, sending F-15s up, costing them X amount of pounds. They basically just stopped chasing them, didn't they? They just said, we don't know where they're coming from, we don't know what they are, and we're not going to chase them anymore. It's a waste of time and money.
Mm.
Right, but we still don't see these things in a museum. You know, that's what I want to see is the Roswell craft in a museum. I want to see the bodies and just, you know, come clean, which I think they're going to have to do at some point.
Where do you, because, I mean, Andy always talks about there'll never be a nuclear war because these guys are going to protect us, this kind
of thing. Which they have. And I'm so sure of that.
Yeah, and we've seen many accounts of them stopping nuclear test fires, this kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, there's obviously been missiles gone in the air, nuclear missiles. These lights come down, bang, 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 and these missiles have just been completely
inert. Yeah. So, I mean, where do you stand on that? You know, given that we dropped two on Nagasaki and Hiroshima, so...
Yeah, where were they then? And, you know, Fukushima happened, and there are some reports of lights over the Fukushima thing, but they didn't stop it, did they? I don't know, you know, because I've heard reports from people who've been told flat out, oh, yeah, we're not going to let this happen. This is what the ETs told them.
Yeah,
there's no way. And one lady, I mean, she had this really amazing account where she was taken on board, and there was this volcanic eruption, and she was on board this UFO while they're pulling people out of this town. She says it looks like South America somewhere. They were dark-skinned people, and this UFO lands, and she's helping them with a bunch of other people, by the way, and different types of ETs, grays, human-looking, the Nordics.
Yeah.
And pulling all these people out of this town before the eruption and during it and afterwards. And she wakes up the next morning in, like, Nebraska is where she lives, thinking, gosh, you know, was this a dream? This is really bizarre. I had one of my nighttime things again. She turns on the TV, and there's this volcanic explosion. It's real. I've got the book on it, actually. So, I don't know. Do you think they saved those people? And she's like, I think they did. Where are they now? That's my question.
Just a few years ago, when there was an eruption, Iceland, was it?
Iceland.
There was quite a few UFOs filmed by the news, you know, flying in and out of the eruption itself. So they do seem to have a fascination with volcanoes.
Is it certain people, though, because, you know, are these people, I mean, there's been other, you know, places where there's been eruptions and earthquakes and a lot of people have died, but they haven't gone there and, you know, so is it certain, I mean, I'm getting a link here, maybe these people being family members, You know, like Star Children, Star Seeds, come what you want.
Is it genetic?
You know, these people, we brought these people here, you know, to certain places, we will look after them.
Yeah.
You know, or is it certain individuals, maybe it's millions all over the earth, they're our children or they're our family, and we'll give them information and we will look after them.
Yeah, I think there's something to that, you know, in terms of who gets contacted and why.
Yeah.
You know, I've really looked into that hard because I want to figure it out. There doesn't seem to be many patterns. I mean, it's evenly divided between men and women. Education has no bearing, or race, or, you know, I didn't find any strong links on blood type, which was a thing for a while.
Mm.
So I didn't see a lot of patterns, but there are definitely some. A bunch of people who have been taken on board have been told flat out, yes, we are related. Right. We were us in a past life.
So it's all connected.
Yeah. And it also seems that they follow families.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you're abducted, chances are your parents were, or a grandparent or an uncle or something. But I've definitely found one pattern, which I found really interesting. And found it again just recently. A lady from Norway, she contacted me and had this amazing experience where gray-type ETs came in and healed her. And I'm like, oh, gosh, you know, and she described this big experience, which was actually really scary for her. The ETs never talked. They didn't say anything what they were doing, just kind of manhandled her, she said, flipped her around on her back, you know, pressed something up against her back. It was very painful. She had a back injury, but after they left, the back injury was cured. A brand new case. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, well, what do you do for a living? And she's like, oh, well, I'm an environmentalist and a human rights activist. And I'm like, gosh, you know, that's exactly what John Hunter Gray does. And this is a pattern I noticed. People who are doing good for humanity in some capacity have a much higher chance of contact. And by that, I mean environmentalists, animal rights activists, doctors, teachers, writers, inventors, this type of person, entertainers even. It's kind of a loose pattern, but it turns up again and again, particularly in the healing cases.
I mean, I go along with that to some extent, because like I've said before to you, and I've said, you know, there's many a person in this world who wouldn't be missed. I don't mean that to sound cruel, but I mean, I'm talking about, like, you know, homeless people, tramps, this kind of thing. If you were to abduct them tomorrow, no one would ever know, chances are.
I mean, the government do that anyway.
Well, yeah.
We need the ETs to do it. The government always.
But they seem not to go for the easy targets, if you will. They do seem to have an agenda towards a particular person, don't they? Rather than just picking because if we was doing it, predator, you know, thinking as a predator, we take the weakest, don't we? We take the youngest, or we take the eldest, that kind of thing. Yeah. Like, you know, like a lion, or, you know, but they don't seem to do that, do they? They seem to go for targets. So
yeah, they seem to pick people who are influential in society in some respect. But it's still, I mean, there are people I talk to who are like, no, you know, my job is nothing special. I'm just a housewife. One lady I talked to, she was healed. She's like, no, you know, my family, my husband is a, you know, car mechanic. I'm a housewife. I live in Nebraska. I've got 3 kids. You know, I have no idea why they healed her of, like, hypoglycemia.
Okay. These healing cases, you know, they really do fascinate me because, I mean, this is like when you talk about people say there's no evidence for stuff and this, that. You've got documented evidence here, haven't you, of people actually going to the doctors or even in hospital with, you know, an acute illness, and then a few days later they're cured. And obviously that's in medical records, isn't it? So that's tantamount to evidence, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's some of the best evidence we have. Yeah. I mean, there are a number of injury cases as well. People have radiation type illness after a close encounter, which is also great evidence. But these healing cases, yeah, I love them. Because, I mean, there's one case where a lady was diagnosed with a cyst in her breast. and went to go have it removed. But the day before she had it removed, she had a bedroom visitation. Didn't remember a whole lot other than some weird figure coming into her bedroom. And had a UFO actually following her home at one point prior to this operation. Goes to the doctor, and they're like, well, gosh, you know, it's gone. Your cyst is gone. So there's the before and after x-rays that show this.
Yeah.
And there's a number of cases just like this. One lady I talked to, she went to the doctor, and they're like, well, your cyst is gone. This is weird. And not only that, you had an operation, didn't you? She's like, well, no, I didn't. You know, that's why I'm here. I said, well, we know you did because here's a laser scar. And not only that, there's fluid here in, you know, one of her tubes that's only present after having surgery. And so they said, we know you had surgery. Where did you go? And she's like, nowhere. She didn't want to tell him. She didn't tell.
Yeah.
I wonder what would happen if she did. They wouldn't have believed her, but...
How many cases then, Preston? Is it, I mean, I've had an out-of-body experience where I've been brought back into me. You know, I told you before, didn't I, where somebody, something, you know, brought me back. I saw my body on the bed, but I was being carried, you know, and then all of a sudden I was back into my body. And then, so how many cases are like physical and how many more cases are out-of-body with these ET
abductions? Yeah, like in the dream state.
Yeah, dream state. But it's actually your astral body, not your physical body, if you know what I mean.
You know, because you get, like, because obviously people go through windows and doors and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Right. I'm going to say most of them are not dream state. And because when you look into this, people are not where they're supposed to be. People will wake up in the middle of the night and their spouse is not in bed.
People
come back and their clothes are on wrong, or they're not even their clothes.
Yeah, that's weird.
And there's physical scars. If you add up all the evidence, it points towards this being physical. There are a couple of cases, only like two, where someone's like, claims to have an abduction experience, and people are like, no, you were there the whole time. Most of them, no. They're not where they're supposed to be. I think most of them are probably physical, but that's not to say that people don't have contact in the dream state or out-of-body, which does happen. There's this whole out-of-body connection with all this. People will have an experience. This is pretty common. They'll be taken on board or even just have a close-up UFO sighting. And following this, they start having out-of-body experiences. And weirdly, this happened to me. I never saw a UFO, but I got really involved in this whole astral travel thing around the same time as I started researching UFOs. So I think there is a connection.
Yeah.
And definitely people have told me they'll be on board, they're being examined, and they are standing next to their body watching this happen. So they're out of body physically on a UFO.
Yeah.
They're watching themselves being examined or operated on. So it's both in some cases.
Yeah. So obviously the astral body is the physical body as well, but just a different frequency. But these ETs can maybe manipulate that because they can be, they can go through the frequencies.
It does seem that way. I mean, because we do, there are many accounts of where they basically just walk through a wall.
This is what kept me out of UFO research. I mean, these guys not only have telepathy, they're levitating, they're going through walls. We can bring in Bigfoot.
I'm going to bring in Bigfoot. But I seem to always do that.
Not Dogman.
No.
It's a lot to swallow. I mean, it's a big pill. I can see why people are skeptical or are like, no, I'm not even going to look into this. This is ridiculous.
But, following along from the healing side of things, which is obviously incredible, but we do get quite a few cases, and again, you know, legitimacy, we don't know, but we get a lot of cases where people have been pregnant, you know, whisked away, and then they come back and they're not pregnant. And again, this is proven by, you know, medical certificates and stuff. So, you know, what do you think is going on there, and why, you know, what's the obsession with the child?
This happens mostly with the Greys, in my experience. I started getting cases of this immediately. But right when I started investigating back in 1986, there was a lady at work who had this experience. And this was before Bud Hopkins' book, Intruders, came out, before Missing Time was a bestseller. and he was uncovering these cases, as were other researchers. And I think it speaks towards our relationship to the Greys being much closer than we realize if they're interbreeding with us, and apparently they are. This is what the witnesses have been told that I've spoken to. Some have asked flat out, why are you doing this? And the ETs have said, oh, it's because we're having trouble reproducing. And we're trying to strengthen our genes and get to the point where we can reproduce again and look more like you. Like in some cases, they said, oh, yeah, we used to look just like you guys. We are basically human, is what they're telling these people. So I think, yes, it's an interbreeding program. It's one of their main agendas. I think they've got multiple agendas. I mean, they're seen hovering over graveyards. What's up with that? That's actually really common.
I got a theory about that, but go on.
Hovering over mines as well. Gold mines.
Yeah.
Uranium mines, titanium mines, iron mines, you name it. So that's clearly one of their agendas. This whole genetic thing is very strong.
I think the graveyard is more to do with the energy.
Ley lines.
Yeah, because most churches are built...
Every cathedral is built on a ley line or a dragon line, whatever you want to call it.
So
it was built on there purposely.
So again, they seem to... A Stonehenge, is a good example of a place where, millions of sightings of UFOs around Stonehenge. But again, it's one of these places where the energy's strong. And I think they're more coming to the energy rather than the graveyard. I think the graveyard's that... like when people see Bigfoot or this kind of thing at an ancient burial ground, like a Native American burial ground. And they associate the burial ground with the... Bigfoot is, he's watching over No. The same reason the burial ground's there is the same reason the Bigfoot's there. It's the energy,
And I think
it's the place.
There must be a huge well of water underneath because, again, water.
Yeah, water
vortex,
again.
The energy,
and,
isn't it?
And obviously that coincides with the full moon, the energy there. So, go on.
I'm not sure I entirely buy that because there's graveyards all over the place. They all can't be on ley lines. And here in the United States, I don't know, but there's something to that too, because there's these flap areas, like Topanga Canyon is one area that I've researched, and it's not just UFOs, it's ghosts and religious miracles and cryptozoological creatures, which is true of, like Sedona and, upstate New York and other flap areas do seem to have this sort of multi-phenomena.
Yeah, it does all seem to go in hand in hand.
Well, the ley lines are all over the earth anyway, but I think what we're trying to say is that the churches, cathedrals, ancient burial grounds, they are on actually a crossover line. So it's kind of double the strength. The ley line, it's like a network of energy lines of the earth. I think they've positioned them in such a way where they cross over. So there's more energy there. That's why the church is there with the bells, because bells
and bodies,
is frequency sound.
And bodies of water is the other one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right. Well, they're definitely attracted to those. But in some of these graveyard, I did a study of graveyard cases, and they're not only being sighted over them, they're landing. In some of these cases, they're actually disturbing these graves. There's two or three cases at least. So I don't know. I think they're there for the genetic material. That's my theory. But I don't know.
We're still quite possible.
Digging up corpses.
Yeah. Grave robbers.
Yeah.
Well, but if it's a genetic thing,
if they're technologically advanced, why are they robbing a grave?
No,
that's not logic to me. That's
my point was the same thing. It's like if this is genetically based, then they're not very good at what they're doing, and then the problem because they always say we're having trouble reproducing, blah blah blah, but the only issue I've got with that is they've got no genitals. Well, I can see why they're having a problem.
Well, yeah. Well, maybe that's possible. Yeah. But I think what's happening here, and I said to you, didn't I? They're having problems staying in this low frequency. I think the problems, they're trying to reproduce bodies because their bodies they've got now is breaking up. So they're having trouble now in staying in this frequency. I think they're dying. You know, so, but they're trying to reproduce to have, to keep, I mean, I think they can go into another frequency, but I think they want to stay here.
Mm. So is it a genetic agenda then? I guess the point is.
Yeah, well, I think hands down, we've got a handle on that. There definitely is a genetic agenda.
Mm.
But I agree that look at the way their ships turn on right angles, can disappear, turn transparent. These guys do too. I think that they do have a handle on these other dimensions.
Yeah.
They use it as a technology. I mean, their ships can change size. Yes. One guy I talked to.
I've seen that, yeah.
And he was inside the UFO and it's changing size.
Yeah.
Another guy I talked to, same thing. He asked them, they're like, he says, well, how big is this thing? It keeps changing size. And they kind of laughed. Gray type ETs. And told him, oh, it's whatever size we need it to be. So they've got a real handle on this. You know who Leonard Stringfield is? The crash retrieval guy?
No.
He kind of pioneered the research into crash retrieval incidents here in the U.S. and would interview all these military people who were involved in, you know, photographing a UFO or guarding it or, you know, guarding the bodies or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
He interviewed this one guy, an army photographer, who was taken to a hangar to photograph this UFO. It was about 30 feet across, metallic. And they're like, photograph it, which he did. And they're like, okay, now we want you to photograph the inside of it. He's like, oh, okay. And he goes inside this thing, and he says it's 30 feet on the outside. Inside, it was so large, you couldn't throw a rock and hit the other side. It was like a giant gymnasium on the inside.
Like a TARDIS.
And there's a number of cases like this. You know, people I've talked to, it's bigger on the inside, which to me speaks to these guys have such a control over time, space, that they can do this sort of thing. And this is how they do time travel, which also turns up.
It is strange because you're talking about... We're talking about, you know, them having the ability to shift between dimensions, this kind of thing, quantum physics as we follow. But then we talk about crash retrievals where it's a physical object on the ground. I'm not sure because the UFO I saw, actually there's been a couple, but the one I saw was basically, it looked like a star. And then it became a craft. But when it was a craft, it was, you know, I could have thrown a stone and hit it. I know it would have gone ting. It was definitely
so
nuts and bolts,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
But how can it go from being a star, you know, a light source, if you like, to a craft?
Camouflage, isn't it?
Well, I don't know, because if it was camouflage, the light itself wouldn't be there, would it?
Well, again, it's still kind of camouflage, isn't it? Because obviously you didn't think it was a craft, you thought it was a star.
At first, yeah.
At first, yeah.
Yeah, I talked to a number of people who said the same thing. It was a light in the sky, and then it comes barreling down, and it reveals itself to be a metallic craft.
Yeah,
these things are leaving landing traces. I mean,
that's what
no
I mean. So they are physical as well as being, you know, it's weird, isn't it? You think it'd be one or the other.
The only craft I ever seen was twice. I've been shown is white cubes, not spherical. Or I've seen cubes in the sky going. Dashing and gone. So
is that common?
Yeah.
The cubes, are they common, Preston?
No. I get hardly any of those, but I have to tell you, there's not a whole lot of uniformity. I wish they were all the same shape, but
I wish it was like Star Trek, you know, where you're looking at this is a Klingon shop, this is you know what I mean?
Right?
Yeah.
I mean there's triangular, I get that a lot, saucer shaped, spherical, those are the main ones.
I think the triangle's more man-made, would you say?
Not all of them. I mean, what, the Phoenix Lights? That was a triangular craft, and I doubt that was ours.
Was it a triangle? Was it more like a delta wing, though?
Well, yeah, I suppose that would be a more accurate description, but definitely I get triangular craft, which I don't think they're going to be flying them over, you know, suburbs.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense, does it?
So, another question I'd like to ask you, Preston, is these ET races, which we know they are here, and they come and abduct and help, and what are the agenda is? Do you believe they are here? They've got bases here, or do they just come from their planet, from that thought, have they got bases here? So they've got a focus point where they can just come and go.
Right. I don't think we really know. They're very evasive about it. I would not be the least bit surprised if there are bases. There's some areas which are super active. I mean, there's off the coast here of Southern California. I've got all these USOs.
Yeah, under the sea, yeah.
Yeah.
And, boy, I'm wondering if there's a base there, because some of these cases number hundreds of craft, which would be fine if it was just one case. But no, it's not. There's a number of cases involving hundreds of craft. So if there's not a base, there's a parking lot down there.
Well, I think the film The Abyss told you that anyway, didn't it?
Right.
You know, that was a famous film, and it showed you all what they had underneath the bottom of the ocean there. And
I think a lot of this stuff,
machines as well, and
a lot of this stuff is put out in the media.
Yeah, I think it's to laugh at you and say, look, they are there, but you're not going to know because you're sheeple. So,
I'm guessing there are bases though, because there are a number of areas like this, and it would be so easy for them to do if they can, travel through solid rock, which people have seen, and things like this.
That was going to be
the moon.
Oh, the moon. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Because we hear stories about that being hollow, don't we? But one of my questions, because when if someone said to me draw a UFO abduction experience or an abduction experience, alien abduction experience, I think most people would draw, firstly they draw grey, secondly they draw you being levitated out of your bedroom, that kind of thing. Then they draw you on a metallic table in a UFO, you know. So, that's pretty common, you'd think. So how many of these cases occur not in a craft? Because I don't know if you were the A-70 abduction case, which happened up in Scotland, I think it was.
Yeah, Sean had it. Yeah, the story on
those two fellas started off in a craft, but then they was likened it more to be like a cave system, possibly alluded to underground. So what's, do you come across cases where it's not taking place? Or should we say, did it take place? Did it always take place in a craft? Did it sometimes take place in a bedroom or a other place?
Or maybe home. Take them home.
Right. It's all over the place. I mean, often it is in a person's bedroom, and it doesn't matter where you live. I mean, it could be in a hotel room. I've got a case in the Marriott Hotel in Woodland Hills, or crowded condos, ships, automobiles. But yeah, a number of people. Usually they were taken into a craft.
Hmm.
Presumably it's a craft. They describe, the rounded walls, and there's rare details, which a lot of people don't know, about how the lighting is or the air, the quality of the air.
Hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Or how the ship might change size. A lot of people don't know that. Those are little red flags I look towards. But yeah, I do get underground cases. One guy told me, he was not taken into a UFO. He said there were rock walls.
Yeah.
And he saw praying mantis type ETs. They weren't really grays. Another lady, she says, well, I don't even know how to describe where they took me. She says it was a huge room, like a auditorium. It had a rounded ceiling, no visible lights, but it was very bright. She says there was industrial carpet on the ground. There was little booths, like, in an office. And there was this 9-foot-tall, orange-haired alien wearing a cape operating on her. Definitely not a human being. She said it was very scary. But it was not a UFO. There was hundreds of these booths. Each one had a person in it. She thinks maybe it was underground, but she couldn't say. Mm. She doesn't know.
Well, that's...
But it was huge and not a – I mean, carpet, for God's sake. I mean, how do you
– You can't do a cave. It's weird, isn't it? Because you think it's going to be sterile and that, and then it's in a cave.
Obviously, did this lady have health issues? Did she have any beforehand?
Yeah, she was actually, I think that's why they took her. She I mentioned earlier, she had hypoglycemia
following
the birth of her child. It got really bad. She was losing weight, went to the doctors. They couldn't help her. Her dad had died of diabetes. They said, no, it's not diabetes. We're not exactly sure what it is. But she was so sick that she was passing out 3 or 4 times a day, and carried around, orange juice and protein.
Yeah, that's no fun, is it?
Nope.
And I had this experience. it, and following it, she was very sore. She says it hurt really bad, and she was sore for about a week. But following this experience, she didn't pass out the next day. She started gaining weight immediately, and boy, she was better. She was completely healed.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, I have no idea why they healed me. No idea at all. And she contacted me because she wanted to know, had I ever heard of this ET she described? And I had to tell her, no, I haven't, which is another thing that's really frustrating. There's so many different types of these ETs. It's not just grays. It's not just praying mantis. It's not just, you know, the Nordic human looking. There's this kind of catch-all category, which is pretty large, you know, 25%, which are totally unique. I've never heard these types of beings before.
So do these beings work together? Are they kept separate, or is there cases of them working together?
Yep, I've got many cases where the Nordics and the Greys are working together, and sometimes the praying mantis, usually Nordics and Greys, and the Nordics, I'll call them Nordics or human-looking, seem to be in charge.
Got the Palladians as well, something.
Yeah, I've got a kind of hitch with the Palladians, so I've got kind of a, yeah, that's another story. Yeah, several nights, so, yeah.
But there seems to be some sort of hierarchy. I'm not sure who's in charge or who's the boss or exactly what kind of society or social structure they have.
So they've got an older kind of structure.
But I mean, are they genetically linked then? Because, you know, we hear stories of the Greys saying they used to look like us, and the Nordics, presumably, you know, to all intents and purposes, are us.
Right.
So is there some sort of genetic link going on there, do you think?
Well, it bothers me that they're all the ETs have eyes, a nose, mouth, hands. Mm. You know, it's very Star Trek. And it kept me out of the field for a long time because it was just unbelievable to me. But what it comes down to is we're stuck with these stories. This is what's happening. This is what people are reporting. And I think it does speak to our relationship with the ETs, and for that matter, human origins. Did we evolve here? I'm not so sure we did.
I'm pretty positive we didn't. Yeah.
I just think that these Greys are, I class them as non-human, because I think it's the kind of robotic kind of, what do you call the Borg, you know, like Star Trek, you know, where they're built up. There was human before, but they're more...
some of them, yeah, for sure.
You know, they're kind people of more... no empathy. They've got no emotions, no empathy. Yeah. Like the
no
Borg.
No spark in their eyes.
Yep.
There's nothing behind there. They're robotic. They move in lockstep. They can be turned off. People have seen them stacked up like cordwood inside UFOs.
Really?
Yeah.
Yep. So they're just two or three cases right off the bat that I know of.
So they're just robots then? They're just slaves? Or they're kind of workers?
Yeah, so they're working for somebody's agenda then.
The really short, 3-foot-tall ones, I think perhaps that's true. But
yeah,
you know, some of these guys, no, they're definitely biological. That's my assessment, is what we're dealing with is people like us. You know, because people have smelled body odor on some of these ETs.
Yeah, yeah. I'll say a friend of mine was abducted from being very small. She remembers, you know, from being very little to the present day. So you're talking maybe 30, 40 years, you know, span there. But she was one of these kids who was always pointing things out, you know, to her parents. Like, what you'd assume was a ghost.
Yeah.
She was saying, oh, look, you know, there's a man here or whatever. And the parents would just think it was an imaginary friend, that kind of thing. But later on, she realized it was these aliens, but she said every time she got abducted by these creatures, she never found it, you know, threatening, that kind of thing. But she said they'd always come, and the Greys would be waiting for her when she got there, but they'd send these little sort of 3-foot-tall brown Greys, if you like, brownie red colored Greys. And she said they really smell, they smell like rotten garbage. So
yeah, I've heard that exact description.
Have you?
Yeah, rotten garbage.
Yeah,
sulfur, this sort of thing.
Yeah, that real pungent smell, and she could smell that in a room,
Yeah.
Afterwards, you know, when she woke up in the morning, that smell will still be lingering there. But obviously they took her to the craft, and the Greys did what they did with her. Then they brought her back. They just was
orderlies
really, more than out. But
yeah, porters.
Yeah. So yeah,
it's very strange. They're whatever they're doing, they're interested in all things human. I'm not exactly sure what their fascination is with us, but I'm thinking they know more about the human body than
they do.
Well, yeah. if there was here to kill us, they could have easily just found a virus or whatever by now, couldn't they? And wiped us out. That would have been pretty easy.
I think that's the first conclusion most UFO researchers come up with, is like, wow, you know, if they wanted to take over, they could have done it.
Yeah. But it makes you wonder. I mean, what sort of time span do they. Because you imagine if we go to, you know, most planets, I would say 99.9% of all other planets that could have a life, we probably wouldn't be able to stay very long in the atmosphere, because we are, you know, tuned into this one. We evolved in it, so to speak. So that's why we can only live in it. So, you know, do you get the sense that they can live here for a very short period of time, or do you think they could actually live in this atmosphere? Because that's, you know, could be a reason why they're not taken over, potentially.
Right. Yeah, I wonder about that. And the fact that people are taken on board and they feel basically normal gravity and they're breathing.
Yeah.
So, but often people will describe the air on board UFOs as being difficult to breathe, super stuffy or smelly, or they're gasping for breath. So I think there might be some differences. And that could be one of the factors that's keeping them, you know, off Earth and for long periods of time. But I don't know. At this point, I'm still at the speculation stage. I don't have any real evidence to speak towards that one way or the other.
What about breathing apparatus?
That doesn't turn up a whole lot.
Yeah.
There are a lot of cases where people see ETs walking by, and they'll have a, I mean, like the Travis Walton case. He describes helmets over these Nordics. And lots of people see, like, divers gear.
Maybe that's to protect them from us.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, if you was thinking... Yeah, exactly. But if you was thinking, stop spread of viruses, that kind of thing, that's what I was thinking. Yeah. But if you think back to, you know, culture and that, all the aliens that came to Earth always had these glass domes over their head, didn't they? And all that kind of stuff.
I think that's the movies.
That's what I'm saying. But if people were basing, because a lot of people will say most of these abduction cases are just based from people's perception of the media, blah, blah, blah. Well, if it was that case, then people would report this, but they don't, do they? And the fact that, you know, you've got so many different types doing it as well. It's not just one, is it?
I think my personal opinion is there's a soul connection. Of all these, I believe in the star children or star seeds, and they come here to help, and they're put on the earth for different missions or whatever, and they're looked after, you know,
I do think we're dealing with aliens. I don't think it's demons. I don't think it's.
I don't believe in demons. I believe they're human, but they're magicians. They're in hiding. They just create the demon. They create the energy. They're just magicians. That's my take on it.
If you talk to Jacques Vallée or John Keel or, you know, a whole field of researchers out there who say, no, these aren't aliens at all. Has a mask.
Yeah. Like a perception type deal.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Which doesn't fly for me, because that's a very anthropocentric theory.
Yeah.
Putting us at the center of everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Which never works out.
Yeah.
You know?
that just keeps us dumbed down. You know, keeps us dumbed down and there'd be a sheep. And
but it's that human, that, you know, humans have always done that. They always want to be the center of attention. They always want to be the most intelligent, blah, blah, blah. And so that sort of always.
We could be more intelligent, but I think it's the powers that be at the moment don't want us to be intelligent. I think these ETs, and I think they are, most of our family as well, our family, because I believe millions of years ago we travelled the stars together. So, yeah, definitely connection.
If we ever get a hold of their genetics, you know, these alien bodies and test them, that they will have genes like we do. Maybe not the same sequence exactly, but sort of genetic material and proteins and the same sort of carbon-based
Life
form that we are.
I got two questions then before we go. The first one is, like I mentioned before, is where Bigfoot fits in to all of this, because I've heard a few accounts where people have gone aboard, they've been taken aboard, maybe Nordics, that kind of thing, take them aboard a craft, and then there's this big, hairy, what you call a Bigfoot to all intents and purposes, on the craft, and obviously it's intelligent, tends to communicate telepathy-wise rather than audibly. But, what sort of percentage, or have you come across any cases where Bigfoot's been at the centre?
Yeah, I sure have. I was pretty upset about it.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want that, for one thing. It just complicates the issue. And didn't want to look into Bigfoot really as a whole, but I did. I ended up writing a book about Bigfoot just because it kept coming up. I needed to figure this out and the connection. And I'm going to say it's less than 1% of the cases with UFOs have any Bigfoot connection at all.
Mm.
And as far as Bigfoot, it goes the other way. Most Bigfoot cases have no UFO connection whatsoever. But there's this weird smattering of cases. And, you know, it's, gosh, a couple of dozen in the literature at least. 30, 40, 50 cases where Bigfoot shows up during a UFO sighting, or, you know, they'll see one on board or what have you. So, yeah, I mean, one guy I talked to had a Bigfoot encounter. The next day, a UFO lands, and following that, he has this haunting in his house, a really bad haunting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a weird connection there. It could be, like we were mentioning earlier, there's sort of a paranormal fallout or a flap area where this sort of stuff manifests more easily, or it opens up a rift where Bigfoot can come. I don't know. Gosh, it frustrates me, but it does turn up. I've got a number of these cases, and I don't know quite what to make of it. They're both telepathic, Bigfoot and these ETs, which could be a factor.
You hear that a lot, don't you? You hear a lot of what they call mind speak, don't they, in the Bigfoot world?
Yeah. So I started seeing these little patterns. I'm like, hey, you know, that turns up with the ETs as well. People are like, oh, the Bigfoot was reading my mind, and I could read it. I'm like, wow, okay, and that's absolutely true with ETs. So maybe that's what is attracting the Bigfoot and the ETs to each other, because they can communicate.
Possibly. I mean, I know you said it's only, 1% of cases that these Bigfoots turn up.
Yeah, it's that.
Did the people get the sense that the Bigfoot was, of this world, or if, because obviously if it's on a craft, you get the impression that it's not from here, but, where did they get the sense of that, or did they, or didn't they?
There's just really not enough cases to speak to it. I mean, there's one case where a guy did see a UFO on board, a Bigfoot on board this UFO. There was human-like aliens, but with large eyes, and they were ordering this Bigfoot around, and it was obeying.
So it's like a grunt.
Prior to this, they had a number of Bigfoot encounters around their house. I think probably some of these Bigfoot are ETs or being ordered around or have a relationship with them.
The Bigfoot's just a vehicle.
This might be one of these genetic experiments that they tried in the past. Because if you go back as far as the Nephilim, that kind of stuff. They're more serpent-like, but it could be some sort of genetic experiment that was conducted in the past where they wanted something to be on this earth report back, that kind of thing. Because you see, how many cases do you get where Bigfoot's looking in people's windows, observing what's going on? Again, you mentioned the children earlier on, and that crops up time and time again, Bigfoot observing children. Why? I mean, again, we could just go, if we're all this company, why?
Yeah, right.
But,
they could be messengers.
It does seem as like
it's a weird link.
But, it's got to be answers coming soon. I think, where do you stand on the Bigfoot itself then? I mean, do you believe that there is a Bigfoot running around?
Oh, hands down, the evidence is absolutely overwhelming. It's mountainous. Yeah. If you're looking into it, you'll see that the evidence is absolutely persuasive. If you don't believe in Bigfoot, like UFOs, you haven't done your homework.
Yeah.
You really haven't.
Well, I always say you can't believe in Jesus if you don't believe in Bigfoot, because there's more evidence for Bigfoot.
Yeah,
it's absolutely astonishing amount of evidence. There's no doubt it's real. It's all over the world. goes by different names, of course. But,
yeah. But that's been, that, you know, that's my point about the, you know, whether it is he as a spy or some sort of, you know what I mean? Because he is everywhere, isn't he? Pretty much.
I mean, it could be like, you know, I know I read a story a few months ago. This guy said he saw Bigfoot, you know, but then someone else was with him, saw something completely different.
Mm.
You know, it's another creature. It was, like, wow, it was Bigfoot. No, it wasn't. It was so maybe it's what
that's
the people
perception
see.
Again, yeah. And you get
perception
that,
going.
You get
sometimes
that.
The creature can maybe put something out.
Yeah.
And he looks completely different than what he is.
Do you get many cases of people seeing UFOs, you know, like a group of people, and like maybe some of them can see it and some of them can't? Do you get?
Yes, not a whole lot, but that turns up. People will be standing right next to each other, and one guy's looking at it, and the other guy's, no, I don't see it. And it's perfectly obvious.
Yeah.
And one guy was taken on board, and he had this problem, and asked the ETs about it. And they said, oh, well, we can choose whoever we want to see us.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, well, that's why, because he was watching this UFO and the people next to him couldn't see it.
Mm. I mean, I've had a case of that myself. And the guy that was with me, and this is a salt of the earth kind of guy, you know, ex-trawlerman, you know, ex-fisherman, don't take no shit. He's one of them guys, you know. And he said, what the hell is that? And we was driving home. He's looking up in the sky. He's like, what the hell is that? And I'm like, looking. He's like, what's that, you know, above us? And I'm like, what? And I'm looking up. I can't see nothing. And he's saying, what's that triangle? There's a triangle above us, and he says it's got lights in the corners, the usual stuff. It's got red lights at the back, and I, honestly, I'm just looking into the night sky. I even pulled over the vehicle, got out with him, and he's pointing at it. He's saying, what is that? This is on the hard shoulder. Yeah, he could see it, but I couldn't see it.
One case very similar where this guy was in the back seat, and his mom's driving, and his brother's in the front seat, and they stop, and the mother's like, oh my god, what's that in front of us? There's a 3-foot-tall spotted skunk. And the brothers saw it too. And the kid in the back seat says, no, there's nothing there. What are you guys talking about? Next thing he knows, the kid in the back seat is being pulled up through the car roof in a beam of light into a UFO, where he stayed for like 5 hours while his mom and his brothers stayed below and frozen in this car, staring at this spotted skunk that wasn't there.
Yeah.
So, they can put images in people's minds.
Yeah, I thought so. Yeah, that's... so they can like, project. I mean, you could go out one day and see a beautiful woman. She wants you to take you by hand and take you over.
Well, I know that. I know that was a trick.
Yeah, we don't know. You don't know. She could have come with me. Yeah, too, right, baby. You know, you take away and she could be a hideous reptile.
Yeah. You know, I mean, you get quite a few cases where there is sexual relations, don't you?
But, well, yeah, I think
it's another show probably. But,
yeah, definitely. That'd be a double X-rated on me, wouldn't it?
So. But I just wanted to finish on, because you mentioned before about the warnings and like, you know, we get these, a lot of people go aboard these UFOs and when they do actually communicate with the Greys, because it's a rare thing, isn't it? But when they do, and again, this is generally built up over time, you know, trust sort of builds up and then they do sort of open up, don't they? I mean, Betty and Barney Hill, she got the Star Charge, remember?
Yeah.
So some sort of trust going on there, but we get these prophetic notions, don't we? So what does the future hold regarding what people have told you regarding their encounters?
Yeah, well, the ETs, the people I've talked to who, you know, had the ETs talk to them, said flat out, and this is universal, that we are going to have real problems with our environment due to our messing around with nuclear power for the most part. And over again, people say the ETs tell them the world is going to be a very different place. I've heard variations of this. Often it is warnings of, you know, environmental collapse or even social economic collapse.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's weirder, even like, oh, we're going to be moving to the fifth dimension. Heard that a number of times. I'm not even sure what that means, other than there's going to be, you know, ghosts running around and people are going to start levitating and God knows what exactly that means, but it's going to be a different world.
Yeah, well, it could be a raise of vibration again. But
over, by and large, people say, are told by the ETs that yes, open official disclosure is our agenda. And there will come a time when we're welcomed into the so-called Galactic Federation, if you will.
Yeah.
Or the family, or, you know, that we've been quarantined to a certain extent and that is ending and that we're moving into a new era of open official contact and a new age, which it's much more positive, and it's not, well, the world isn't controlled by greed and this one percenters and all of this. We have a new age of enlightenment. But first comes this dark period where
it has to get worse before it gets better.
Yeah, but I mean, who says it's like, that's it, let's do it, you know? It's just going to be the head of the galactic. I mean, it's been getting worse for what? 50, 60 years?
Well, yeah.
Even worse.
Overall, I'm hopeful. I really am. I think that, you know, because right now we're definitely progressing in terms of socially. I think we're more aware of things, more aware of the ET phenomena.
Mm.
We're less, you know, accepting of greed and prejudice and racism and things like this. It's all coming to a head, certainly.
Mm.
It seems to be. But
well, I think
I do think we're going to have problems with the environment if we don't turn around with global warming and fossil fuels and start using the free energy.
Yeah.
We're going to have a real hard time of it. That's what the ETs are telling us.
Well, I mean, they should really kind of pinpoint the government for this. The government should be like, you know.
But again, maybe they're aware of it, but don't care. That's the sort of impression.
Well, I mean, if they're talking about they're concerned about the Earth, which we all are, well, except the government. I mean, the concerns about, you know, global warming, which is caused by the government, you know, this pollution, which is caused by the government, you know, they should be like taking these out, you know. I mean, Nikola Tesla, you know, all these inventions, you know, anti-free gravity, and all these he was canned.
Mm.
You know, why wasn't his inventions came out and blossomed for money, for greed? So, when's it going to end? When's it going to say, that's it, we're going to come in and take this pile of shit out?
Mm.
You know, they've got to be taken out first, haven't they? Really?
Well.
Yeah, it might come down to that. I don't know if the ETs are just going to get a little brutal there and start pushing it themselves. But we'll see.
You see, that's gone out the window, that, hasn't it? Because in the 70s, 80s, they always used to have a ray gun in their hand, didn't they? Silver foil suits and a ray gun.
Yeah,
but
that's gone.
It's very rare.
Golfish ball, wasn't it?
Well, as far as I'm aware, that's kind of gone out of fashion, hasn't it? They don't seem to come with weapons, really. I mean, do you get many cases where you've heard that?
Occasionally. Not your ray gun so much, but like a flashlight type thing, which they shine on people and it paralyzes them or stuns them. People, you know, I did a study of this. People who've shot at UFOs with their handguns, which generally speaking is not a good advice.
Because, no.
Usually what will happen is they'll knock you out and like one case, which took place, these people had these ETs landing in their backyard. The guy runs out with a shotgun, and he sees these ETs coming towards him. The next thing they know, it's the next morning. They're waking up in bed, and they go out, and on their dining room table is the shotgun, and it's completely dismantled, and all the pieces are laid out all neatly in a row.
Yeah,
there you go.
But what did
case after case like that?
I bet they still put that down to a haunting, though, didn't they?
No, not in that case.
Again, this is where the media come out. You know, the movies and that. You know, see ETs and get out there and shoot them. You know, shoot them, man.
Yeah, shoot first.
Kill ass later.
That's probably why they don't come. I think it was Timothy Good in one of his books said that the aliens are here to make us more acquiescent.
Well, that's why I used to have the programs years ago, like the Invaders.
Yeah, I think they're not doing a very good job because it's not really working, is it?
But then
they're fascinated by our emotions, that's for sure.
Yeah.
They seem to be really interested in our aggressions and our abilities to be really emotional, which they aren't, by and large. I mean, they're certainly not as brash and, you know, or funny. They don't really seem to have a sense of humor for the most part. Certainly not the Greys. I don't know. It's all very hard to get a handle on.
Very good. But, it's been fascinating talking to you. So,
yeah,
I mean,
it's been
fantastic.
Thank you, Preston.
Mention where people can find your latest work.
Actually, if you just Google my name or check out your favorite search engine and put in my name, Preston Dennett, it should take you to my website, which is PrestonDennett.weebly.com. Got all my books up there, excerpts. You can contact me through my website. My books are available, you know, on Amazon or other online retailers. But yeah, I really appreciate you guys having me on the show. I love this subject.
Yeah, no problem.
Take it really seriously. I think it'll solve the energy crisis,
absolutely,
the economic crisis, the environmental crisis, all in one fell swoop. Right. And just release this UFO technology.
Yeah. Health and well-being as well.
Yeah, well, you said, I think you've got to take this elite down first. This kind of global, the so-called global elite, they have to come down first. They have to be dismantled first before dissent can be put into effect. Because, as you know, Lee, many inventors have invented. There is free energy, has been for 60, 70 years.
Mm. Well, you hear many, it's been suppressed you hear many accounts where people go get a patent for, some new technology they've come up with, only to find out that it's already been taken out by the military.
Yeah. So I think the technology is there, but I think the
appetite for it's not.
Yeah. It's like, you know, we're the animals and we're going to be dumbed down and, you know, we don't deserve it, you know.
Mm.
But how are we going to evolve if we don't get this technology? So, you know, hopefully these ETs or alien races can maybe step in and do us a favor.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, I think this is why they're not giving us the healing technology, because imagine what we would do with it if the military got a hold of it.
Yeah, yeah. Imagine if we could live for 1,000 years or whatever, yeah.
Ooh, that'd be good, wouldn't it?
I think we used to in the past.
Yeah, I think we used to live longer in the past, but I mean, that's kind of been, people say, oh, we live longer now. No, we don't. I think we live longer before.
Yeah.
But again, that's a thing that's been pushed into the media, you know, because of the drugs, these super drugs now and all these stuff that keep us alive.
Right.
I think we've been suppressed. There's a lot of technology, there's a lot of medicine that's been suppressed. Definitely.
Yeah, totally agree.
Definitely, but I think this elite has to be taken down first, because these are the ones that are keeping it from us.
We'll definitely speak again. I mean,
What
are you working on at the moment?
I just had a new book put out, UFOs Over Colorado.
All right,
Working on a new book about underwater UFOs that should come out next year.
Yeah, that'll
be good.
Yeah.
I'm going to put out a new book on UFO healings, because the first book, that was my first book 20 years ago, had about 100 cases. I've got another 100 cases. So a lot of people are asking about that. So that's going to be my next project.
Mm. Is that just, you know, is that healing? You say UFO healing. Is that like where they've just come in contact with a UFO, not necessarily an alien?
Well, all different. I mean, some cases, they have a UFO just hover over them. No beam of light or anything, and that affects the healing. Other cases, they're struck by a beam of light. Other cases, ETs come into their bedroom. There's like 10% of the cases, get this, take place in a hospital, in the hospital room, which really surprised me. But, boy,
you're
kind of stuck with the cases.
The amount of paranormal stuff that goes in on hospitals is unbelievable, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, ghosts, definitely.
Again, there must be a link. I've always put it
down to the fact that people die in hospitals, so you'd expect, some sort of paranormal.
People have out of body experiences in hospitals as well, don't they? So, and they live
many
going to die, many come out, but many go in for a simple operation, but they die.
Right.
So again,
it's that readiness, isn't it?
And
I think a lot of these abduction cases, you've got to be ready for it, haven't you?
Some aren't, some are freaked out.
That's where it goes wrong, isn't it?
Yeah. Because they think you're calm and all of a sudden you kind of
start kicking
freak
them.
Out. You freak out. Whoa!
All right. Well, we'll leave it there for today. So, again, thank you very much for
joining us. Thank you very much, Preston. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Cheers.
Yeah, cheers. Take care now, Preston.
All right. You too.
Well, they've gone. No, just for now. Wasn't the right time for us to meet. But there'll be other nights, other stars for us to watch. They'll be back.
Wow. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.